Ward versus Ward.
Good morning, Your Honor. Dennis McLaughlin on behalf of the appellant, Catherine Ward, who's the mother in this case. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for a rebuttal. Thank you. You probably heard this a lot of times, but I will be brief. There are two essential issues in this case. First, did the trial court exceed its statutory authority on a modification action, a modification trial of a parenting plan, by modifying the non-residential provisions when the trial court specifically found and both parties agreed that the only reservation under Possinger was to adjust the residential provisions in the parenting plan once the oldest child began kindergarten.
Possinger itself isn't limited to residential reviews, right?
That's correct. I noted that in my reply brief as well. In Possinger, that issue wasn't squarely addressed either. The whole issue in Possinger, at least the way that I read it from this court, was when a court reserved jurisdiction to look at a residential schedule or a parenting plan in the future, is that still a continuation of the initial decision and governed by RCW 26.09.187, or is it governed by the more stringent standards 26.09.260? This case is fundamentally different because the issues presented squarely by the father's own admission during the pretrial phase that the party's intent was only to reserve jurisdiction as to the residential schedule.
What was in the original parenting plan? Was there any limitation on the court's review when it came back for the Possinger review?
There was a limitation as far as it was in the school schedule. The only reservation of jurisdiction in the entire parenting plan was in the school schedule portion of the parenting plan. It wasn't in the under school age, just in the school age, and it says we will we'll review the parenting plan once the oldest child reaches kindergarten. However, that's one document. This was a document that was agreed to by the parties. The mother had always asserted that the provision was intended to be by the parties and therefore the court limited to the residential provisions. The father admitted that in the pretrial phase, saying when he did his proposed parenting plan, he said everything else remains the same. The only thing that there was a reservation of jurisdiction was to the school schedule. That's in the clerk's papers. It's in his motion. He says that the reservation was only to be towards the residential provisions. That's what we proceeded to trial on.
As the trial progressed, though, it became clear both sides were arguing all kinds of potential revisions in the guardian ad litem's recommendations. And in closing, for example, the father has numerous references to this should be changed, that should be changed, we should go this direction. So didn't it end up being tried on the 187 factors, and the court went through the 187 factors?
Your Honor, that is true as to the residential provisions, but also you have to understand that this wasn't just a Possinger review trial. This was combined with a modification petition that the mother had filed, and there was adequate cause found. So under the modification statute, you would go back to the 260 factors, even though they're a little bit more stringent, you would still make the same arguments. So we had a combination of two proceedings going forward. We had the modification action proceeding that the mother had filed that the father elected not to file a counter petition for. He was not seeking to modify. And then he filed a motion to have a Possinger review, and his motion specifically limited that review to just the residential provisions. After the trial, which had the evidence from both of those proceedings all mishmashed into one, the judge specifically found that the reservation of jurisdiction was only as to the residential provisions. She found that she didn't have the authority to, she concluded she didn't have the authority under Possinger to go ahead and affect the non-residential provisions, which was correct given the status and the pleadings that were filed. And then she denied the petition for modification. Once she denied the petition for modification, she was left with this limited passenger review that the father had brought in his moving papers, and the father had stated that this was only going to be as to the residential provisions.
When the underlying foundation for passenger is the court should be able to come back and look at a parenting plan and address the best interests of the children, wouldn't it be very artificial to say, well, you can argue all day long you want about how many days of the week, how many weekends, all that residential stuff, but we absolutely have to ignore that there's tremendous animosity at the time of handoffs, and so we can't even explore any potential ways to address that, whether it's all just dispute resolution or classes or...
I'm not saying that, but I'm saying the procedural posture of going about it is when the mother filed the modification petition, and Shyrock's a great example, the father had the opportunity to file a counter petition. And had he filed a counter petition saying there's a substantial change in circumstances and I want to do more than just adjust the residential provisions, I want to modify these other provisions, then procedurally you would be 100% correct.
But no passenger in Shyrock.
Under Shyrock, in this case, the parties intended for just the residential provisions to be subject to review. They had nailed down everything else. All right? That is what they found. That's what they both said. The moving papers that founded this trial, filed by the father, were just as to the residential provisions. Once the petition for modification was knocked out by the trial judge, which we're not disputing, then you're left with this limited passenger review.
But the passenger provision in the original parenting plan said there was going to be a passenger review at this particular time, didn't it?
And there was a passenger review at this particular
time.
Right.
So just because the father didn't ask for these things, why is the court limited? You seem to be tying the hands of the court. The court knows it's supposed to conduct a passenger review.
Well,
I mean, if you know, your argument seems to be sort of like almost like the court just didn't have authority to go there, as opposed to I was really prejudiced by having this brought up.
May I answer the question?
Yeah.
Thank you. I understand.
Are you arguing you were prejudiced, or are you arguing the court just couldn't go there?
What I'm arguing, well, I think I'm arguing a little bit of both, because in the pretrial, the reason that the passenger review went to the trial was based on the father's motion practice, which was an evidentiary motion. In there, he says, I only want to, that we have this agreement, and the agreement provides that we are to look at only the residential provisions. That was the intent of the parties. That was the intent of the court. That is what he said. That is what he went to the trial on. We went to trial on a broader issue of modification. We lost that issue. Then the only thing you were left with is father's motion, which was limited by its own terms to the residential provisions. And because of the unique posture of that case, the trial court exceeded its authority as it recognized it did. And thoroughly it recognized in there that says, I don't have the power or authority to go beyond that.
You have 3 minutes.
May it please the court, James Hendry on behalf of Mr. Kenneth Ward, the father in this matter. Your Honors, we spent 2 weeks arguing and providing testimony. A fair majority of that time was taken up by the mother and her counsel in this case, providing evidence on both residential and non-residential issues, bringing in multiple witnesses as to the facts in this case. The GAL was on the stand for quite a long time.
And was the trial court's authority limited, as counsel suggested, to just the residential provision? The trial court had no authority to address the other?
I believe, Your Honor, that two things exist. One, the court has a broad range of discretion in these cases because the standard of review is in the best interest of the children. And when the court sees the best interest of the children is served by addressing both residential and non-residential issues, the court should and must address them.
That didn't work in Chirac, though, right? Where you had a modification and no cross motion for modification, and the appellate court said, you can't go there. Trial court can't go there. So
but without objection, the trial court did go there, but over no objection by either party. Both parties argued these issues and
in
presented
case,
them to the court. In this case.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this case differs from Chirac in that manner that there's no objection.
It's kind of like a CR 15 situation where the pleadings are kind of amended to conform to the evidence. I'm not saying that that's necessarily the rule you'd look at, but this is not an unfamiliar situation.
Yeah, and of course it's not unfamiliar. And although the practice of law is varied and different, there's probably nothing more varied or different than family law. And the issues important to the parties get washed out, get reviewed in trial. And whether that's pre-briefed or not pre-briefed, it is evidence that the court must consider in the best interest of the children.
So counsel says that the notation in the parenting plan for passenger review was in the residential section.
Mm-hmm.
The petition that was filed only requested review of the residential section. But your position is that is not a limitation on the court's authority, that the court is, once it's in front of the court for passenger review, best interest of the child controls throughout.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And the court, over 2 weeks, has a unique position of seeing both the petitioner and the respondent and their witnesses, and has been introduced vicariously to the children in this matter. And I believe that RCW 2609, in its many subsections, addresses that matter by stressing that in a modification of the parenting plan, that the best interest of the children is controlling. And when the best interest of the children is illustrated by both petitioner and the respondent, it's before the court, and the court should rule.
Well, is there anything the court could not have done under a passenger review? I mean, in other words, does the passenger review make it unnecessary to move for modification as the mother did? Could she have just come in with a passenger review and said, I want all my issues litigated here?
Well, yeah, I think so. In this case, mother had a pressing issue for her modification. Father temporarily moved, and she thought it was a longer-term action than, in fact, it turned out to be. So,
could she have simply brought that before the court for passenger?
If she wanted to wait.
I see.
If she wanted, but she wanted to move at that time on that issue, and it got tabled because father's move wasn't as permanent as she had thought.
So then is the timing was important then, you're saying? I mean,
yes.
In other words, when the actual trial took place, it was at the time when the passenger review was anticipated.
Right. And then these issues...
Is that right? The oldest boy was about to go to kindergarten?
Yes.
The mother didn't file her petition, though, until April of 2015, which lined up with the timing for passenger review, right? At that point, the oldest child was ready to go to kindergarten.
Ready to, but not headed there yet. The trial came on much later when the child was there at school.
Let me take you to the other issue raised about the grandfather and the original provision that had an absolute ban on contact, and then at the last minute presentation, how about changing that to just no unsupervised contact, and the court acknowledges, well, I haven't heard evidence on it. The guardian ad litem hasn't addressed it, and we really haven't had any argument before now, but I'm going to go ahead and do it.
And I think that plays into the fact that the trial judge becomes intimately aware of the best interests of the children that are the subject of the trial.
But isn't that inherently prejudicial to the other side who objected and said, I haven't had a chance to address the evidence is all in. I haven't had a chance to address any of that stuff. And then the court said, why don't you two step out and see if you can resolve that? And then nothing I can see in the record comes back except the orders entered that does make the change. So do we know what happened?
I don't recall the specifics of Mr. McLaughlin's and my discussion on that matter.
Okay. But it still stands. Is that sustainable? Is that something that the court can just say at the last minute, well, no one's argued this up to now, but I'm going to go ahead and make another change?
I think that the matter was a relatively small issue. It had to do with visitation of an elderly relative, and that the trial judge addressed the issue in a make sense matter.
Well, kind of a speculative matter, wouldn't you say? Who knows what's going to happen here? Maybe this kid won't have a chance to ever see this if illness progresses and there's no evidence that's going on at all.
Fair enough. The trial court did address mother's concerns on the issue by taking off this permanent ban and making it a supervised situation for the children to get to know who their grandfather was or is.
Well, I mean, there must have been some reason why the ban was put there in the first place. You know, with some people, you don't want even supervised visitation. And so without having some kind of evidence to show whatever the condition was to begin with, why it was there, and that the conditions that had supported it were no longer there, I don't see how you could justify saying, okay, I just think this is a good idea for children to get to know their grandparents. What if he's a child molester?
And there was no evidence that there was. There's no allegation that he's a child molester.
I'm just using that as an example. I don't think in our record we don't know what he was accused of.
No,
we don't know whether he isn't that anymore. There seems to have been an alcoholism problem. Perhaps it was in the family.
Yes, there was an issue of alcoholism, and that's why the trial judge made it a supervised visitation situation rather than a total ban or an unsupervised.
I mean, was there discussion of that in the record, that the grandfather was an alcoholic and that was why? That the permanent ban had been in place?
Not in the trial record, Your Honor, but in previous documentation leading up to the parenting plan that was subject to modification in this
case.
Right,
and so if it's not a good idea for a small child to have to be around an older person who's drinking a lot, even if they're supervised, maybe you need to know that drinking has ended before you change that ban. But there's no evidence of that. I mean, you're right. It's a relatively small issue, but our point is there just isn't any evidence for it.
And I would have to defer to you're correct. There's no evidence in the record. I've got 20 seconds left. Any other questions, Your Honors?
All right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much.
I'd like to address your statement, Judge Becker, on the fact that this was sort of tried by the implied consent of the parties, I think is what I got out of what you were saying. And procedurally, it was awkward because what they did is they took the petition for modification, which the mother filed, by the way, on the April before the child was starting kindergarten. So the trial would have to occur at the same time as the Possinger review anyways, as Judge Varellin, just so you know procedurally how this went. So mother knew what she had to do if she wanted to change the non-residential provisions, because she knew what the intent of the parties was when they entered into their agreement, and that was that we were only going to revisit this issue of the residential schedule. That is all the litigation that we're going to be going forward, and we were going to settle everything else and just leave that one flap open. She knew that if she wanted to change the non-residential provisions, she had to file.
When was the hearing on her motion to modify? When was that ordered?
The petition to modify?
Yeah.
It was the trial was the same. That's why you there was no implied consent of the parties because we didn't know whether her petition would be granted or denied until the conclusion of the trial when the judge said, I'm going to deny the petition. And therefore, I'm left only with the Possinger review. So the Possinger review, evidentiary hearing, and the trial on the modification were consolidated into one by the commissioner who entered adequate cause. And therefore, it wasn't tried by the implied consent of the parties. And as soon as the court denied the modification petition, since there was no cross-modification petition filed, they were left with the father's moving papers that he filed by motion. And that's what's the key to this case. Under clerk's pages 488, father's counsel said that the parties specifically reserve the issue of the school schedule portion of the residential plan until their oldest child starts kindergarten. Then Macy submits the proposed parenting plan, which says everything else stays the same except for that school schedule, which would change this way. So that is the procedural posture of what was left for that judge to consider once she denied the modification petition. And that was the problem.
Assuming that the judge is limited to what the parties proposed to look at in a Possinger review.
Well, she made specific findings that's what that provision was for when she entered her order denying the modification petition. In two places, she said that we're only going to revisit under the Possinger the school schedule. In fact, she said she didn't have authority to go elsewhere when it came to decision-making.
Who drafted the findings that the court signed? I know it's got your tag on it, but I understand there was some...
There was a presentation hearing, and I got tagged with doing the findings in a motion, even though I lost the petition. But I did it.
Okay.
But there was an evidentiary hearing, or a hearing on presentation.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.